kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you doing?
I'm not playing Ori, so I'm mad. This is a garbage 2 hours of my night when I could have been playing Ori.
This is bullshit. I hate my life.
Nobody's happy right now. Nobody's going to be happy for the next hour and a half. We're all going to be pissed off because it's not Ori.
Yeah, tell us how you really feel.
Ori. Ori okay. Is how I really feel.
The important part is you were honest about it. You were honest, Ori.
As you can tell, Pernell and Chris are here.
Yeah, I'm mad as hell because I'm not playing Bassin's Black Bass starring Mark Davis on the Super Nintendo.
I, on the other hand, am playing a game, but I'm playing it one-handed because I'm here.
What are you playing, Pernell?
Game that I'm reviewing tonight, so yeah. I can't say.
How are you not? Why are you waiting till we're recording to play the game?
I always like play games while I record. That's part of the goof.
You know what you should be playing while we record?
Nori.
Ori.
Both of you should be playing.
You sit there and go, I don't have any time, but we have all the time in the world right now. What are you doing?
Playing.
What are you even doing with your life, Pernell?
Not Noriing. No Nori.
No, Ori. Where are you getting the N from?
I'm making it up as I go along. I'm winging it, baby. Nori, Nori, Nori.
You done flew into the bushes is what you done did.
Nori's a kind of sushi, isn't it?
I believe
it's seaweed.
It's a DDR song.
No, Nori is seaweed. That's right. Seaweed.
It wraps in seaweed and it's seaweed a DDR.
Also, I am I'm ashamed because I just Googled myself or like my last statement and it's Bassin's Black Bass with Hank Parker. Mark Davis's is the fishing master.
Chris,
I always get my Super Nintendo fishing games mixed up.
So disappointed in you, Chris.
Oh.
You know what would prevent that?
What was that?
Playing Ori.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Ori in the seaweed forest.
I would play and eat that.
So, yeah, as you could tell, Ori and the Will of the Wisps comes out this week. We're going to be talking about the game on our next episode.
Which means I have to shut up about it now.
I mean, you don't have to shut up about it. The embargo's up. Like, reviews are out. Everything's happening. It's just, you know, for our schedule-wise and because we want to respect the wishes of the developers and wait for the day one patch to launch instead of all these reviews coming out beforehand that don't care and they just want their easy, quick hits. We're doing it the right way. We're waiting.
Yeah, but no reason you can't talk about Nori in the seaweed forest, though. Get on it.
Yeah, the world needs to know.
That's right.
I've heard it's a whale of a tale.
It's delectable. Oh, mercy.
So how's everyone doing?
I'm mentally deranged these days. I've taken to doing such strange things as 1 a.m. and no sleep.
We just keep swimming. It's fine.
I'm in that, like, weird mode where I've had, like, a 2-hour nap, but I'm also, like, drinking caffeine, like, desperately. So, like, pretty soon I'm going to be so awake. And right now I'm just, like, you know, getting there.
So by the end of the show, you're going to be like, let's roll, motherfuckers!
Yeah. Let's rock!
You know what you can do when you have all that excess energy later?
Oh, yeah. What could it possibly be?
Just make some sushi. Make that sushi.
I mean,
finding Dory in the blind.
All the time in the world in your hands where a Switch could sit with a game.
There's like already Switch shaped indentions in my hand, like permanently. I'm always playing Switch.
It's such a good device, though. I mean, it's worth it.
My sister just bought a Switch this week. She can't wait for Animal Crossing.
She made the right decision. I wasn't going to buy that damn game, but everybody and their grandma is. So just like with New Leaf, I'm probably going to buy this one too because I want the camaraderie of playing games with my friends.
Yeah, I pre-ordered my my Animal Crossing just last week. Also, my sister got a Switch. I bought her Dragon Quest XI for Christmas.
Nice.
Yeah.
Where'd you pre-order from?
GameStop.
And what are they giving?
I don't know. No. I literally just want the game. I think one's like a poster and one's like a notebook or something. Like Target's a notebook. And I'm like, I don't really care for either of those things. Like, I just want the game to sit inside my Switch.
I want you inside me.
Yeah. Sometimes I want the big elaborate collector's editions, and sometimes like extra stuff is just like, well, this is gonna sit in the case
forever. Dude,
I'm going through Best Buy for Animal Crossing and Doom, actually, because Best Buy, if you buy Animal Crossing, they have like a stuffed bag of bells from the game. Normally $20, you could get it for $5.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So I'm getting a plushy bag of bells.
Nice. My cat would love those.
Catnip bag of bells.
I got the Mew Mew for my cat.
Budget Arcade Podcast. What's today's topic, Cole, or if I have anything to do with it? Cole, what do you really want to talk about tonight?
Ori.
Nori.
Not 2 Point Hospital?
I have that's how much you can guess that I love Ori if I haven't played 2 Point Hospital. And I didn't even have to uninstall it. I was just like, nope, fucking Ori. This is my life now.
Become one with the Ori.
I've actually heard this level of enthusiasm for Ori from like more than two people now.
What, the new one or the old one?
Well, the old one, but because the new one's not out yet, but yeah. Like still.
Man, I don't know. Yeah. You could have a whole network of reviewing people doing the thing.
Yeah, pretty sure. I can't decide whether I know more people who are on the like review and journalism side of gaming or like straight up development. I don't know.
Or how about music?
Yeah, that's most of them. Hell, some of them I'm like, you know, actively trying to inspire to get into it, you know? That's a VGM covering is that spreads.
I wish Chris would do more VGM covers, like Chris Huber, our old Chris.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I wish he would do
this,
more.
Not this
I wish Chris Taylor Chris. Would do more game
well,
covers.
Well, Chris Taylor already does do game covers.
I more do, but...
More!
No, more, yeah. No, that I agree there. I'm you know, Gimmick's gonna come... Like, we're doing some new stuff, but... and we do have a show this week, but yeah.
Ooh,
like
we're where are you playing?
Really, San Antonio at the first ever Super Bitfest, which was a cool multi, like largely focused on Texas VGM acts. Cause now there's enough of us where there could be a focus.
You know what you could play?
Put on by Bitforce.
I know what you could cover.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
What's that, Cole?
The Ori soundtrack.
You're going to Ori yourself silly. You know that?
The theme song for Ori and the Blind Forest is really, really good.
Oh yeah. Actually, I'm pretty sure it has been covered by somebody.
Oh, it's all so good.
Probably some Materia Collective thing.
Probably. Materia Collective covers everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
They are a busy group of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just the largeness of the group means that, you know, there's a lot of ground gets covered under the same like umbrella.
Or does it? Yes.
Which might be mixing my metaphors, by the way. I don't think you're supposed to. I don't know.
We got games to talk about, though. Should we get to the games?
Sure.
Because we got a lot to talk about. We're going to kick things off. Purnell, you're going to start things off for us with the La Mulana Hidden Treasures Edition, which is a collection of La Mulana 1 and 2, developed by Nigoro, published by NIS America, released March 17th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $59.99, which includes a 2-disc soundtrack, a book, and a jigsaw puzzle. Again, this covers La Mulana 1 and 2, so we'll start with the first game. Again, it released March 17th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99, bundled digitally with La Mulana 2 for $39.99, or available in the Hidden Treasures Edition for $59.99, which is physically available, which is cool to see NIST finally put something on Xbox. Can I get that out of the way, huh? Can we get a round of applause? NIST, thank you.
Clap, 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 clap.
I got my Hidden Treasures Edition coming in next week, so I'm excited for it.
Damn finally. Right you do.
God if damn right I do. I ordered that.
You. Yes.
God, I have so right. many NIS games now.
Anyway, your destiny awaits in La Mulana. Take control of archaeologist Lemeza Kosugi and navigate through puzzles, traps, and deadly guardians in order to claim the secret treasure of life. You'll need sharp wits, quick reflexes, and most importantly, all the courage you can muster. Will you succeed in unraveling the secrets of La Mulana, or will you fall victim to the dangers that surround you? Purnell, tell us.
You will not. There's your answer.
Okay.
Easy peasy, beautiful cover girl. But all jokes aside, though, so if you've ever wondered what it is like if you've ever watched the old Indiana Jones movies, right? And you're like me, you've always said to yourself, I know this is a TV show already. I know this is a movie, but nonetheless, this is some old BS because this guy would not survive half the crap he's done. He would not be able to make it. He would have died when that first boulder came after because he wouldn't have outrun it in time, blah, blah, blah. He basically would have succumbed to at least some form of trap. How does he do it? Well, with the La Mulana game, La Mulana, you get to experience firsthand just what the hell that's like, because this game involves you being an explorer, running around I guess one would consider a Metroidvania style game, but I consider it more of like a adventure puzzler or a puzzle platformer. Let's go with that. Adventure puzzle platformer. Boom. Exploring this environment, trying to decipher the mystery of the La Mulana ruins. And the La Mulana ruins are actually a series of interconnected labyrinths, about like 10 of them actually, that are all interconnected in weird and puzzling ways that you have to traverse by way of traditional platforming to ultimately get to the end. And how I would say that is the best way possible in a direct sense is to find the 8 guardians located in each location, well, in 8 of the different locations. There's more locations than there are bosses, but the 8 guardians located amongst the local areas, defeat them, and then unlock the path to the final boss being quote-unquote Mother, which you'll learn about who that is when you play through the game proper. But that makes it sound really simple, because getting to these bosses is going to make you pull your blooming hair out. The puzzles in this game are... they range from being, you know, toddler preschool kitty to make you feel like you got things happening the way you need to, just basic platforming exploration, all the way down to just straight up you need to use the internet and Google or something. Fun fact about this game. So it originally came out in the early 2000s. It was made to replicate an MSX title. When that game was released, the denizens of the internet actually ended up having to come together as a collective on forums to solve the puzzles as a group, because really? They couldn't do it alone. Yes. And when you play the game proper, you will learn why that was. With the La Mulana remake, which this game actually is, they actually were smart. They were kinder about some of the puzzles. Yes, they rewrote some of the clues, rearranged some things to make it more solvable. But it's still really tough. Like, to give you an example or an idea. So, as you walk around the ruins, you'll come across tablets. The tablets will have dialogue on them. You'll also come across skeletons that will sometimes tell you things. And you have to use an item called a hand scanner to actually read them and decipher what they actually say. At some point in the game, your main character gets a laptop program, because you carry around a laptop somehow. You get a laptop program that will allow you to record dialogue from some of these like statues and stuff, up to like 20 dialogues that you can record. Even with that in mind, you're going to want a piece of paper and a pen. Remember playing games with those two things? Yeah, you'll want both of those on hand. And I have scrawled notes over here from playing the game where I noted like locations on the map, the name of the room that I was in, things that stood out to me that I might want to come back and check out, a person I met inside of a room, all these kinds of notes, because it always comes back.
There are weird clues. Like, there's one that no one listening is just going to remember by the time they get to it, so it's not really a spoiler. But there's a clue that basically suggests ducking or kneeling in a really distinct location. And you have to actually, one, note that you have to note the location when you come across it. And you're not going to just see it. You have to know it. Like, you'll have to actually truly know it. Then get there, then realize that even though you can't duck in the game, you still have to press down for a period as if you were ducking or kneeling. And then you unlock one small thing from a much greater puzzle. Now, there are cool things that you find as you explore these rooms, though. It's not just find the guardians. There are also a variety of weapons, a total of about 5 or 6 that you can find from various treasure chests. And a decent amount of sub-weapons, such as like shurikens and caltrops and a shield even, and just things of that nature to make it a little bit easier for you. Not very, but a little bit more easy for you to deal with the actual monsters you come across. And then there's a bunch of just general tools, mostly for puzzle solving, but some are just like very lax things. There's an item that makes it so that skeletons don't hurt you anymore. And there's an item that makes it slightly easier to swim underwater, but there's still things you'll be looking for, and you'll be glad to have them nonetheless. But for the most part, how I feel about this game is hard to put into words, because I have come across a variety of people over the years who, when I've talked to them about La Mulana, they will tell me, I would like it if it were easier to play. But this is the kind of game that, when I talk about games that are meant to be challenging, as opposed to games that can just be kind of like nerfed down for everyone to enjoy, this is the prime example of a game where you can't have it both ways. The game is designed in a very specific way to challenge you. It's almost like saying, so you've played these other 10 games and you want something that's really going to push you. Here you go. Here's some actual puzzles in a platformer. It's not just meant to just push you through the game. It's going to make you work for the meat and potatoes. And you're only going to play this if you enjoy that sort of thing. And if you don't, you probably won't, unless, but it could also be acting that taps that potential that makes you realize you do like it. And as for how much I like La Mulana 1, I've played that game multiple times. I've played it when I was recovering from gallbladder surgery. I was playing it when it released on the Wii U. I was playing it on the PlayStation Vita. I bought it again on the PlayStation Vita. I played it on Xbox One for this review, and I got the Switch version coming in next week. It is one of my favorite games. It is one of my top 3 games of the 2010s. I love it that much, and I will sing its praises from here to El Segundo. It's just a fantastic product that feels like it's from a bygone era. And I heard you mention that the Hidden Treasures comes with the OST.
Mm-hmm.
That in and of itself is worth its weight in gold. The music in this game is phenomenal. I was doing planks at 1 o'clock this morning, to the music from this game. It just, like, hey, if I'm going to sit here and do this torturous exercise this late at night, may as well have some great jams to play to it. Playing La Mulana music. It's just good. It's a fantastic OST, all done by one guy. The developer of the game, actually, I believe it's the same person who did the OST. But it's, so it's just
basically a one-man operation.
I want to say there's a whole studio there, but I think it really is just one guy. I'll have to double-check, because the sad reality is, like, I've beaten the freaking game, and I'm still like, I don't ever pay attention to the credits. but
well, you should have.
I should have, because I kind of regret it now. But honestly, one guy, many guys, the point is, they made a mean-ass game, and it has a great OST. Now, one thing worth pointing out, though it's not a glitch or anything, it's just a design, actual intended design that I need to mention. Two things. One, you do get maps as you explore the ruins, right? And when you get the maps, they're kind of like grid-based, like it's a bunch of squares and a horizontal and vertical plane, right? So in a normal game, when you get a map and you see squares like that, you would think, if I leave this square from the top of it, I will enter the square beneath it, I mean above it, from the bottom, right? It just makes sense. You're passing to the top. You're passing up to it. But by the way this game is also designed, the maps aren't even always what they seem. Sometimes you'll leave a screen from the top of it, and you'll end up on a completely different screen on the same map from the bottom of it. Which means you can't even use the map at face value, because sometimes they'll flim-flammy and you'll get confused if you just allow the map to just be a map. You have to actually make a note that says, and this is what I did anyway. I'm like, okay, if I leave C3, which is the coordinates of a room, I will enter F2 from the bottom. Or to get to this room, I need to actually, in order to get to C3 from the left, I have to actually enter D4 from the right. Like, I have notes like that. And it sounds torturous, but it's not. It's freaking great. It's enjoyable, and I love it every minute of it. And the other thing I want to mention is the controls, too. So, the controls of this game are like part Mega Man and part Castlevania. So, you know, in Mega Man, you can kind of jump and just kind of do it finessing in the air when you're going up and when you're going down. Mm-hmm. And you know, in Castlevania, where you're kind of forced into, like, you're forced to commit to your jumps.
Yeah.
In this game, your ascent is kind of a forced commit, but your descent, you can finesse it however you want. So, you're going to be, it's one of those games where, like, when you leap, you have to be like, I'm going to leap at a forward arc and just take it. And then from there, I can figure it out. You can't just, like, jump up and then just kind of sort of cook to the right. Nah, you have to go. You have to commit. And it will be annoying to people who just want their platforms to be just like, hey, this is very fluid and loose. I can just move free flow as I want. Not in this game. No.
Yeah, controls definitely took me a while to get acclimated to. They were unique to get used to the jumping. It was definitely interesting.
I agree there. But it's worth noting, and that's why I wanted to point out, it's worth noting that that is deliberate. It's not like a design flaw or they just suck at programming jumping controls. They were deliberately programmed that way because that it determines how you'll approach the platforming in the game as a whole. So if they made it really easy, then, well, somebody might say, well, that's artificial difficulty. Maybe it is, but who cares? The game's still fun despite that, and I love it for that. But it's something worth noting in the review proper. I also didn't encounter any glitches or flaws or issues or anything like that. And just wholesome, pull your hair out, kiss my ass, gameplay. Also, it's worth noting that there's one other thing to note is, like, when the one particular placard says, do not read me, listen to what it says, and don't read it, or you will regret it. And I love that it is on that, too. So,
no, Lord.
Yes.
No, that's not the only game in the package, because La Mulana 2, again, developed by Nigoro, published by NIS America, released March 17th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4. This one for $24.99, again, bundled digitally with La Mulana for $39.99, and available in the Hidden Treasures Edition for $59.99, which includes the two-disc soundtrack, the book, and the jigsaw puzzle. Renowned archaeologist Lameza Kosugi has gone missing, and only his daughter Lumisa can find him. Enter Eglana, an upside-down version of the legendary ruins of La Mulana. Think fast, act fast, and whip hard in order to overcome dangerous traps and elaborate puzzles in your quest to uncover unfathomable secrets. What will you find at the end of your journey, triumph or defeat? Purnell, how was La Mulana 2?
Funny part, this will be a shorter review by comparison, simply because La Mulana 2, in my description, is more of what you liked about La Mulana 1. It's basically, hey, did you want more of that game? We programmed that. So it's more, exactly. Yay. Like, and it's fantastic. It's more labyrinths, all cryptically connected, just like before. In fact, even a lot of the same, a lot of the main and sub weapons are even exactly the same. So you're not going, oh, I got the shurikens again, or oh, I got the chain whip again. But guess what? Doesn't fucking matter, because it's freaking great anyway. It's just more good things. Like when you play Metroid, and then you play Super Metroid, and you get the ice beam, you're not like, oh man, it's just the ice beam again. You're like, yeah, I got the ice beam. Now I can use it in Super Metroid, just like I used it in Metroid. Same logic here, because the game still freaking works. The formula is great, the OST is sound, and the puzzles are still bullshit. It's great like that. It's an outright jam. And there's even, like, new weird styles of puzzles in this game that I didn't even come across dying in the original La Mulana for good reason, because you got caught in a trap. But a cough trap. but, like, it's just more of what you love in a great way. I like that, just like in the first La Mulana, which I actually didn't point out in that review, so I'll just say it here, it's also very freeform in that they're, even though they may have a preferred route you can take, is fairly open season for the most part. To give you an example, if you play, let's say you play to like, you find your first or second boss in the game, right? And you're like, all right, this was a fun fight. Actually, this actually happened to me. So I'll say it in this regard. I'm like, okay, this was a great fun boss fight. I want to hear the music from this boss fight. So I go on to YouTube and look it up. And in that video, I found someone actually playing and fighting that boss. And before they started the boss fight, they paused the game. So I was able to see what their inventory looked like. They had a lot more stuff than I did. So I'm sitting here thinking, how did he get that weapon before I did? I don't have any of these things. And you know, I'm fighting this boss right now, which means he found stuff I didn't, or he went to completely different locations that I never went to. You know? And I've also started on this game on Steam, back when it released on the Steam download. And even then, my progress on that version before playing this one, completely different. My play style on this play of the game has been completely different from my play style on my previous run on the Steam version. Unintentionally. It's just how it is. Unless you're running an FAQ, chances are your play route is going to be different from anybody else's you know. And that's great. Because that really does truly feel like you're exploring a labyrinth and finding and solving puzzles and finding secrets yourself. It's euphoric. They even have like items where when you find the item or you hear a secret, it goes woo woo. Like it just lets you know you found something or something cool's in here. Can you figure out what the cool thing is? And then you're all punching around for. Sometimes it'll tell you that there's something cool in a room, but you can't get it for another 3 hours. But you know, whatever. At least you know it's there, and you'll figure it out eventually. But I honestly cannot gush enough about these two games.
It sounds like you enjoyed yourself just a little bit.
Just a tad. I freaking adore these games, and I greatly, greatly appreciate that NIST put this game out, because I was actually kind of sad that La Mulana 2 didn't have a physical out there somewhere, so... Of course, when they released it, I had to jump on it. There was no getting around it. So, and I'm doubly glad. Like, we were like, you want to review this? I'm like, I'm already getting it in the mail. I don't care. I want to review it because I want to talk about it on the show.
Yeah.
I want to be able to talk about how great this is. It deserves to be heard. This game.
Well, there's four options, so we're going to take care of all four of them. First up, La Mulana, $15. What's your verdict?
Buy that shit.
La Mulana 2. $24.99. What's your verdict?
Buy it.
Or
why are we even talking? Just go buy it.
They have
just buy any version that fits your budget. Buy any of them. Buy them all. Shit, I did. I bought the game 4 times. Just do it.
Well, then I guess the Hidden Treasures edition for $60, which includes all the other goodies.
It's coming in the mail at my house, which means I'd be a hypocrite to tell you not to buy it. I'm buying it. Buy it.
All right. Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Wonderling, developed and published by Retroid Interactive. It released March 5th on the Switch for $14.99. Take control of the Wonderling, a low-level video game goon who has just unlocked the power to jump. Unable to stop or change direction at will, you'll need to plan ahead and master the Wonderling's abilities to navigate treacherous scrolling levels and chase that pesky hero. Chris, tell us about Wonderling.
So it actually only hit me like a couple of days ago that you know, like, it's, you're an underling, but you're, you know, a wonderling. Mm-hmm. Because you're special.
I'm proud of you, Chris.
Thank you. So this is a, you know, a new retro game. That is to say, it's pixelated, but obviously made in this era, partially by the fact that how gorgeous it is. It's an amazing looking game. You play a little minion type guy with like the, you know, the derpy tusks and like the thick eyebrows, you know, not a very smart cookie. you're brought back to life after getting stomped by the hero of what one can only assume is a video game. By a witch who I guess is the bad guy of the game, but, you know, she does it for publicity because I guess she's just constantly like talking to her like minions over like a news network of some kind of propaganda network, filmed by a cow that is like her number two. And, you know, so she like, in order to regain like her, constituency's like faith in her, she raises one of the minions from the ground, because he's not like dead, he's just stomped, you know, on the ground, and gives him the power of jumping, and then tasks him with catching the hero, who, by the way, is a carrot, and he is in pursuit of Princess P, who I assume is going to be like green anyways. So yeah, the you know, you start playing the game, and it's basically you only have jump initially. You just basically jump out of a portal, which is the thing that the hero does. And you know, he just persistently runs forward, and every time he hits a wall, he turns around. Your goal is to get to the other portal at the other end of the level. And of course, in a game like this where it's kind of an auto runner, I mean, it's not, because you know, you only die if you hit something dangerous, which, you know, depending on what is I mean, I guess it is an auto runner actually, now that I think about it, because you run out of time if you dally too long. So your character for some reason subsists on sunflowers. If you collect them, you know, they're basically like coins sitting around in the level, and if you collect them once, then they are added to your total, and, you know, there's obviously a set amount to collect, and the game does a really good job of letting you know which ones you've already collected by opening them up into actual sunflowers instead of just the buds. So you collect the buds the first time, and then the sunflowers the second time, but either way, you have to collect, you have to collect them within a certain amount of time or else you die, and that factors in, of course. And sorry, I'm also dying. And of course, there's a little spiky.
Quarantine him.
Do what? Oh yeah,
quarantine
in my room.
Off with your head!
Oh. You say he's not quarantined right now. He's talking to us from his bunker.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, like, so the whole thing about games like this is that, you know, the real challenge has to be in the actual stage design. Like, how do they design this thing to make it, you know, both challenging and engaging? And the level design really is like where this game stands out. It has superb level design. You know, all of the obstacles are like laid out like really, you know, in interesting ways. And there's different, like, once you get into, you know, you can just run through levels and beat them, of course, but every single level has a bonus item that you don't have to collect, but it is a costume change. So you can dress up your little underling in like all kinds of different suits. You know, hand to mouth. They're a lot of them are from other video games.
Nice.
They do make a lot of references, a lot of fourth wall in this game. It's actually very charming. It's like, it's very funny. Like they low key, like, you know, make fun of like Bowser, for instance, without naming him. But yeah, so like there's, when you add those in, those actually add another layer of challenge, because, the thing is, like I said, the sunflowers are finite in each level. So there's only so many. Well, usually when you go to get the bonus items, which also could be pieces of the soundtrack, pieces of, or actually alternate exits that lead to other challenging stages that are much longer, then it becomes a thing where you basically have to blaze your path to the secret item, but leave enough sunflowers so that you can make it back to the exit. So that's what they mean when they say planning your route. So you like end up having to dodge like actual power-ups so that you don't, you know, get them all immediately and, you know, your timer doesn't run out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found myself going back, like I could not, once I completed World 1, I went back and got everything. I could not put it back down. It's so engaging like that. And yeah, like I said, the soundtrack is really lovely. It's you know, it's got a lot of charm to it. The graphics, like I said, it's just this lush, amazing pixel art that, you know, I think we see it enough now that sometimes I kind of forget that every instance of it is just like this like special treasure. Because I'm just like, I always see these great backgrounds and I'm like, oh, that's nice. And then like I really look at them and I'm like, dang, this took somebody like a year to make, I bet. And but yeah, so like I said, though, back to the level design, like it's not just bumping against walls. Like there's different things like, you know, doors that you can only go through once. There's mushrooms that, you know, give you a super jump that actually work. Like you don't I think I complained the other day about a game that didn't let you control it very well. And there's like certain stages that have little like you know, speed up parts of the ground that make you speed up. And of course, oh, I almost forgot to mention, after you complete the whole set of levels and are ready to move on to the next world, two things happen. One is that you get to do a boss fight where you're the boss. You actually get to fight the hero, but you're the actual screen-sized enemy.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's actually really, really awesome. And the other aspect to it is that you then get a permanent new power. So, like, you know, then you get, like, a dash move that allows you to do a long jump. And then, you know, of course, the infamous double jump. But, yeah, like, you end up getting, like, all this stuff. And so they, you know, of course, change out the layout of the levels, like, to accommodate these new powers. And, you know, every new set of stages is a whole, like, another way of, like, playing the whole thing. So I was really, really impressed with this one. I actually, I don't know that I thought it was going to be much, but whatever it was, it exceeded my expectations.
Well, then for $15, what do you think?
Yeah, this one's a really interesting one. And if you're into these games that are like the auto running puzzle platformers, this is the one that definitely has gotten me the most hooked so far. I really, really enjoy this one. And like I said, something about it initially, I was like, okay, that might be okay. But that's a lie. It's very, very good. So
nice.
I definitely recommend this one for folks who like the, you know, who like the stylish platformers that have, you know, not free exploration, but, you know, actually causes you to have to think about levels and things like that, but not in a frustrating way, which is nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Amoeba Battle, microscopic RTS action developed and published by Grab Games. It released March 3rd on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $14.99. Amoeba Battle is a new breed of real-time strategy game where you control versatile amoeba in the battle for the microscopic world. Unlike other RTS games, there are no bases to build. New amoeba are created through the miracle of binary fission. Pernell, tell us about Amoeba Battle.
Amoeba Battle is a very adorable real-time strategy game. The idea is that you start out, depending on the map and setup, you usually start out with like a few, usually omnivores. Omnivore microscopic amoebas are critters that, well, just like in science, they eat plants and animals, or in this case, other microorganisms. So when you are on a level, like you said, there's no base. You just start out somewhere on the stage with a group of microorganisms, and you're tasked with exploring, locating sources of food, devouring it, and then using the gains from the food to split your microorganisms into more microorganisms. So let's say you are a locust, which is the default omnivore type that you can get. Eat enough algae or microalgae, which is like sort of a one-time consumption versus a source of food that can regenerate over time. You can then become two locusts. And then two locusts can become four locusts. Four can become eight, so on and so forth. And it's just kind of like a bit of exponential growth there for your organisms. Now, every once in a while, you will come across hostile microorganisms. And when you do, you can tell some or all of your amoebas to do battle with them. And then it's just kind of like a little cute skirmish where they're kind of butting heads against each other and knocking each other's life bars down until the other team or other entities are dead, hopefully. You don't want to be the ones that die. And if that was all there was to it, this would be a pretty simple game, but it's not. Because, in addition to that, there are also other organisms you can have. It's not just the locust. There are sharks. Sharks would be carnivores. Carnivores being they only develop and grow, or rather, they only can feed and then split by attacking other actual organisms. So they basically want to be aggressive in order to develop and expand themselves and grow into, you know, duplicate themselves. So, and then there's just, again, a variety of different types you could get. Herbivores, they typically can have distance attacks because they don't have to eat. So they don't have to actually physically fight, or they don't have to eat other microorganisms. So they don't have to worry about getting up close and personal. So instead of having melee attacks, they fight from a distance. And by doing that, they also just fight from a distance. But so how do they feed and grow? They eat algae exclusively. And when you eat enough of that, they can split. But in addition to that, depending if you can come across grassy terrain, they actually heal in grass. So you can kind of use herbivores as snipers, which is a weird way to phrase it. But point is, herbivores are typically snipers, distance attackers. Carnivores are up close in your face, and omnivores are in your face, but they can also thrive on either plant or critter. So you can either have those by default if the game gives them to you, and then use the food that you eat to split them. Or if you only have one type and you want to develop into another, you can use research points, which are gathered naturally over the course of combat or gathered by placing probes in appropriate probe node locations on the map. You can spend research points to turn one type of microorganism into another. So you might say, hey, I'm tired of having this locust, but I have a ridiculous number of research points. I want to turn it into a queen. Well, then you spend the research points, turn into a queen. It goes into a hibernation pod, and when it comes out, boom, you have this superpowered unit. And then you better protect the hell out of it, because if it dies, well, you just wasted a lot of research points. So a lot of gameplay thought then becomes making a thing evolve by spending the research points, then kind of keeping it back as best you can or protect it until you can evolve it, or rather, until you can feed it and replicate it, so you can have multiples of the same dude. So you basically return your investment, so to speak. Now, the thing that makes this game tough, though, is, again, the lack of bases. It's an interesting concept for a game. When you think about it, usually when you start these sorts of games, you have a default base, so you know, fortify my base. Fortify the base so that if anyone wants to attack you, they have to get through your defenses to get in. But you have no base in this game. You're just wandering a map, and so are your enemies. So whoever's best at setting up their game plan and whoever's quickest at getting a strategy together will likely find the other team and wreck their faces. Because this game does not really play when it comes to Dawdle, just by virtue of the fact that it's open war, open season. But
Something I really enjoyed about the battles in this game, though, is I had a fairly even battle. It was like, I don't know, like 8-on-6 or something like that. And it was a pretty tough battle. And I was going at it, and it was down to like 6-3 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I remembered, oh my God, I'm an amoeba. I could replicate. And then it was fucking 12-on-3.
Yes. It was like ganging up. It was like wham. And it's so appealing. Just like hearing them make these little cute squeaky sounds, knowing that really they're actually viciously mauling each other. It's a very cute and beautiful game. Though the one thing that sucks about it, and I say that not in a mean way, but in a just like, I wish I were better at dealing with this, is that they give you a fair number of ways to, kind of choose groups of amoeba. So you might say you have 25 amoeba on the screen. You want to have a platoon of 8, a platoon of 6, and a platoon of like whatever's left over. They give you the means to create up to 4 different platoons, group them together, and then select them with the cross pad, and then operate. I just kind of sucked at getting used to doing that. It exists, but it takes getting used to. But once you do get used to it, it's very convenient to actually have like platoons in mind, with the intent being to defend a certain point. Maybe if you want to, like, say, like I said, you don't start with a base, but you can say create one, hole up in a corner somewhere and say, this is where we're going to set up shop, create a wall of defense, keep a queen in the back or something like that. And there you go. But it takes getting used to. And once you do, though, you can make strategies using multiple groups that you control separately. The other thing that messed with me, I'm not sure if you had this issue too, Joe, was that I sucked at getting used to the control of the cursor speed, because even at the slowest, that thing whips. It whips big time. But again, it's something that you get used to, but just warning you, the cursor in this game is very fast.
Yeah. But you want to know what else whips? I'm going to use this in a completely different term, but it totally whips the Awesome Prime Drop More Biddies.
Oh, mercy.
I know, it doesn't make sense at all.
and people say that I'm the king of tangents.
I got some garbage segue.
I don't know, man. I got
I
some
put down my sour gummy worms to tell you it was a garbage segue. I've been muted sitting
in. Cole, do you expect better from me?
No.
Yeah, there you go. So Purnell, Amoeba Battle, $15 on this one. What are you thinking?
I honestly think it's a gem. And worth noting for people who aren't, just to kind of mention it, the skirmish mode is a primary way to get into the post-game stuff with like sets of teams of four and two and three or whatever. But there is a campaign mode which kind of walks you through the different unit types and introduces them to you in a way where you can get familiar with them before you jump into the skirmish and just get riddled with tons of options.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I enjoyed it myself. I like the fact that there's multiplayer with it, so you can take out your friends.
Oh, you can. Or join up with them and take out other friends.
Very true.
This is the kind of game where I actually really would like to see. I don't know if it's going to happen because the internet and all, but I would like to see a game like this do well because I like the idea of having like four teams of three apiece just going wild on one map. Because you can do that in this game. And I just picture the insanity that that would look like on the screen. It would be ridiculous.
That would be. But next game to talk about is called Syrup in the Ultimate Sweet, developed by Nom Nom Nami, published by Rattlake Games. It released March 3rd on the PS4, 4th on the Xbox One and Switch for $4.99. Syrup finds a candy golem in her basement. Could the two become friends and finally complete the ultimate sweet? Chris, what the hell is the ultimate sweet?
What the hell is going on here?
And Cole, did you check this one out?
You know what? Worry. And you know what's terrible? You can complete it in 8 minutes on Xbox, and I still just haven't taken 10 minutes.
Wait, what is you completing? What can be completed in 8 minutes?
Syrup.
Oh, you could go way faster than that.
Yeah, like I heard some people, like there's guides for like 8 minutes, but some people were saying you could do it in a little quicker than that too, but I was like, man, I can't even... I just couldn't tear myself away from Ori.
Christ, you were in this Ori.
I know. Sorry.
Ori, oh, my Lord. Ori in the holler.
As soon as you said it, I was like, fuck, I knew I forgot something.
Ori in the blind holler.
Ori and the will of the wisp.
All right, so Syrup in the Ultimate Blind Forest. Let's talk about it.
Hold on, let me be like Purnell. I can load it up now.
You can load it up now, and probably by the time I'm done talking about it, you could get an ending.
Nice. Cole, do it.
Okay.
Chris, tell us about Syrup in the Ultimate Sweet.
Okay, Syrup in the Ultimate Sweet. So, this is a visual novel, you know, the choose-your-own-adventure style one, kind of, where you play as, well, I guess it's a story, so you're not, you're kind of like, I guess you're guiding Syrup, who is the a scientist, an alchemist, if you will, who lives in a town where everybody knows magical powers, but she is, like, against that. She thinks, like, everybody loves candy, and everybody uses magic. That's the premise. And she rejects magic. She thinks the best candy can be made through science. So she makes candy while wearing a lab coat. And one day... she finds that there is a girl made of candy that is in her basement, like one does.
Hold on. And just one moment. As soon as I loaded it up, it popped up with the language settings. And I want to point out that it has English, French, Portuguese, Spanish, German, some symbol one that is probably either Chinese or Japanese that I don't know. And the one I wanted to actually touch on, English dyslexic.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Really?
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that is makes...
not something you typically see, and I just wanted to say kudos on that one.
Yeah, that's actually really cool.
What does it chain? Like,
It narrows up the font. The font is very bubbly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that is interesting. That is
really cool.
Yeah.
Shout out for that.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I was going to point out some of the options in this game, because they're actually pretty cool. But yeah, that is one thing. It does have English dyslexic, you know, font. So that's really cool. So yeah, you play as this, you make choices as this scientist alchemist who finds a girl who is hell bent on becoming your friend, and or having her eat her. That is to say, the candy girl wants syrup to eat her. She's like, this is how, you know, I express my my adoration.
Are we sure this shouldn't have been an Aki game?
Right. And you know, after you make a few choices, like some preliminary choices, that one of which can instantly lead to an ending, if you couldn't guess, you kind of find out from your assistant, who is like just your one employee, I guess, who is like very enthusiastic about this character, what's going on, and you both determine that it must be this witch that is a kind of rival to Syrup. And, you know, so part of the story involves going and talking to this witch, who is clearly like, you know, she clearly like, you know, thinks she's better than she is, you know, and she very transparently like makes a show of saying, oh yes, that thing, I of course made that with my extreme talent. And her assistant is a girl who is dressed up like a cat, and I suppose is a cat. I don't know. Those are all the five characters of the game. And, you know, once you figure out kind of, or once the story gets to the point where you're basically kind of deciding if you want this this candy golem girl to be your friend, or whether you mistrust her and think that she's some spy that's like in there trying to figure out all your secrets. The game then proceeds to where, as she gets closer to Syrup, they, you know, it's revealed that, there's this ultimate suite, of course, that Syrup has always wanted to make, but it requires a little bit of magic to gather up the last ingredient and or make the thing. I'm actually slightly unclear on that. So you end up in a tenuous partnership with the witchy character, and you both go out and you make some more decisions, and, you know, ultimately, the decisions, the endings, there's 10 endings in the game, and they're largely based on how you treat different characters, and it kind of, you know, keeps a hidden stat of that, of course. And, my first time through, I was like, okay, I'm going to make all of the, nice choices to get along with everybody and, you know, clearly point myself to the best ending. And I did that, and the story was about 30 minutes long. And I figured that must be the most content that you can get in a single story. I don't know that for sure, but then I found out. So yeah, I got that ending, and I got a couple more endings, and I was like, okay, cool. And it's very, very delightful. It's you know, it's not a, the story doesn't seem to ever get really creepy at all. Like, I guess if you make bad enough decisions, it does border on it.
I just got an ending, and it was very creepy.
Yeah, there you go. Told you she could do it. Now, here's the thing about the options that what I love about like different things in this game, and I wish more things would do. Of course, if you are replaying the game, you can skip all of the text really quickly to get to the next decision. And then you can just like make your decision there, and then, you know, see where the story, you know, branches off. And it also has a save load feature, so you can do it that way too. You can choose like what all gets skipped in the option menu. You could choose, you know, of course, text speed, and make it do auto, you know, just moving the story forward automatically. And then it actually has an ending list, and it will describe every ending that you've gotten. And of course, some of those change up the title screen, and there's also flavor text at the bottom that's like an asterisk, that, you know, those are really charming too, and, you know, often funny. If you go to any of the ending list where you have, it's got, you know, it's like you haven't seen this ending yet, you know, and it'll have question marks, you can actually highlight reveal secret. And if you push it, it literally just tells you every decision that you have to make. Just like, you know, A, B, A, B, 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 A, A, A.
Nice.
So there's no, you know, true mystery to the game. You can actually just breeze through it and watch all of the endings if you decide the content is good.
Well, it's a Rat-a-like game, so I wouldn't expect anything else.
Right. So yeah, as far as that goes, the music is pretty minimal. It's just kind of, you know, bouncy and whimsical. The characters are drawn in a, you know, like a broad line anime style, like does definitely looks like they all came from some teenager's notebook. The writing is actually pretty good. Like I said, the story never gets very meaty at all. Like it's just kind of like stuff happens. And, but in that way, I think it's very charming and kind of relaxing. It's nice for a visual novel, but like I said, it's very short. So you're definitely, if you're looking to get into this one, I actually would recommend going for different endings and like seeing what all that changes in the game.
Nice. So overall, $5. What do you think?
It's good. I mean, $5 is fine. Mm-hmm. I say it's a buy it. You know, obviously visual novel folks don't have days upon days to read a full book, so I can't complain about it being short. It feels like a good length. It's like the length of a cartoon, so that's kind of how bad. It is. Yeah. And yeah, I found myself completely unoffended by any of it. And like, yeah. I said, I like the QOL options as far as it being a visual novel goes. I wish that more visual novels used like a, hey, here's how you get this ending if you want it, like kind of thing. And of course, yeah. Like I said, the English dyslexic thing is good too.
That's really cool. Cole, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm really surprised by like how adorable it is. And it's a little weird. Of course, granted, I picked all the options to eat the candy girl right off the bat.
Right, that's the option that you can make to end the game very quickly.
You know, I just wanted to see what would happen. I was a little disappointed. I hoped that there was some candy guts, and there weren't, but that's okay.
It describes them, but it doesn't.
It does, but it doesn't show them.
And, like, you know, you have the option in the game where you can hand the candy golem off to the witch, who clearly wants to eat her too. And then, like, you can also, you know, you can, like, visit her later and she's, like, half eaten. And then you can, like, take her back and either leave her like that or, like, repair her. And, like, and if you repair her, it actually changes her haircut for the rest of the game. Because the witch ate half of her hair and then they all decided that that was a better look for her.
It's a little odd, but it's really well illustrated. It's cel shading is good. It's adorable, but it's definitely odd.
All right. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Hidden in Plain Sight, developed and published by Adam Sprague Games. It released March 12th on the Switch for $5.99. Also currently available on Steam and on Xbox One in the Creators Collection section. Try to accomplish goals without drawing attention to yourself. Players control characters in a sea of identical NPCs. Players are given a task, but also the means to eliminate each other from the game. The goal is to blend in with the NPCs, accomplish the task at hand, and take out the other players before they get you. Purnell, you were really excited about this one hitting the Switch, so tell us about it.
So the best way to describe this game would be a collection of mini games that you wish were in Mario Party that are all themed around one very specific concept. That concept being, as the title describes, blending into plain sight. So the idea is that regardless of the mode, I'll talk about a few of the modes, but not all of them, because there's a lot of modes in this game. The general idea is that you and your opponents are thrust into a group of NPCs that either look all the same, slightly different, or very different, depending on the mode. You have no idea who you are or who they are, but you do know you want them dead, or dead fast, but not too fast, because if you try to move too quickly, they'll figure out who you are, because there is a certain method to the madness. So, for example, my second favorite mode in the game is basically a mode where it's one where everyone's the same NPC. It'll be just one type of character. And a bunch of them are just walking around the screen in different movement patterns. Some will just be stopping, going, walking in circles, whatever. And your first goal while you're in here is like, there's two ways you can win this. Either one, you can find the other opponents and kill them. Or there are a bunch of statues littered around the map. And if you walk from statue to statue and touch them, you will get a point. And by the when the time runs out, as long as you hit five statues, and then if multiple people hit five statues, then whoever hits the most statues claims the win. So you might be thinking, well, I'll just run for the statues. Big deal. So, one, if you move a little bit too fast, you'll stick out like a sore freaking thumb. That guy's clearly running statues. That's a human. I'm going to kill him. Because that's the other thing, too. If you willy-nilly kill an NPC, someone's going to see you do it and know that you're a human. Because NPCs aren't killing other NPCs. So your kills have to matter, and they have to count. But if you see a guy running statues, that's also pretty obvious because NPCs don't give a crap about the statues. And whenever someone touches one, a chime goes off. So you know someone just touched one. So if you hear it, you can kind of, it's hard depending on how good you are with like the spot checking, but you're like looking at all the statues like, okay, who just walked through one? Where did someone just pass through a statue? You're looking around, you're trying to find them and spot them out. And it just becomes this weird game of chicken where you're hoping someone screws up. Like I was playing it at a party on Saturday and I'm sitting here like, first I'd do like a quick like circle, a controller spin. But it was slow enough that I felt like I was able to blend. I figured if someone saw me, they wouldn't know it was me. It's just a random NPC just getting stupid. When I do that, hopefully I catch myself. When I do, it's like, okay, time to just start watching. So I'm walking, try to be careful. I'm not rushing the statues too fast. I want them to know I'm going for it. And then out of nowhere, the other guy gets jumpy. And he just like stabs a guy. I'm like, I see you right there. Then he tries to blend into another crowd of guys. Like, you can't get away, man. But if someone's good, they can. They can totally like say line up their sprite with another NPC so that you're walking step to step inside together, and then you just like branch off. You don't know who the fuck it is at that point because there's two different people, but he looked exactly the same. And he just walked out of his sprite. But this guy did not know to do that, so I just tracked him and just watched him. Four statues in, stat. Didn't even know I was coming for him. And it's such a glorious feeling for the guy to not know that you just followed him the whole time. And you just like gut him when he thinks he's got the match. It's so good. And my favorite mode in the game is called Death Race, where it's like 20 NPCs running from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen in a race. You can either press a button to walk or press another button to run. Those are the primary controls for the race. Now, again, you don't want anyone to know that you're the runner and not an NPC. Because in addition to the run and walk controls, everyone gets a bullet. More bullets to a gun if there's more players. So if there's three players, there are three bullets in every gun. So you are trying to spot who is a human and then snipe them off the course. So there's just something devious about that, too. You're like, okay, how long do I hold out? How long do I hold out? And there's something glorious about when someone fires off their last shot and they don't hit you and you start gunning it. It's like, you can't stop me now. I'm just going to run the race. And you just like sprint to the end and you take the crown and you're all smiling like, sucker, you wasted the bullet. You thought I was the fire goblin, but I was actually the knight, you know. But there's like this weird game of chicken where you can even sometimes talk the talk, like, oh, think you got me. Like, basically start talking to somebody, make them think that you know who they are. So they're like, they get edgy, they start running, oh, crap, he knows it's me. And he starts running, like, gotcha. I didn't know it was you at all. It's just, it's such a hilarious and fun game to play. And there's like seven modes in the game that you can play.
There's a lot of stuff to do.
There really is. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, the longevity of one session totally depends on the crew you roll with. I mean, if you're the type of crew that's not going to want to stick with a style of gameplay for so long, like there's people that can play Mario Party Mushroom Mix-Up for hours and never lose track and never get bored. And there's other people who just need to shuffle the works. Okay, I played five rounds, this time I play something different. I'll play something different. And you know what? Both of those crowds will enjoy this game because, again, it's on the Switch. It's easy to go from one game to another on the Switch. You just stop it and start another one. Boom. And on the other consoles, maybe not as easy, but still easy enough. I mean, just pop another game when you're tired of it. But in the meantime, those 5 to 50 matches are going to be a hilarious good time. And it's such a simple concept. It's easy to explain and teach. And at the beginning of every mode, they flat out show you in big pictures, this is the goal of this mode. So you don't even have to like feel like you don't understand it. Everyone will understand how to play this game. And it accommodates up to 4 players. And you should get 4 players if you can. But 2 is fine too, if you only got 2. And
it's just a fantastic fun time. I love the fact that it made it to consoles. I love the fact that it's dirt cheap, which makes it, again, perfect pricing for a series of mini games. This is a quality title. And I originally had heard of it, or rather, I originally played it on Steam at a friend's house. I'd never heard of it. He's like, you ever heard of this game called Hidden in Plain Sight? I'm like, no. And when we were playing it, I was at Death Race, man. We were on that thing for a good hour. Just playing Death Race. Not having any other modes.
Damn.
It's just a good freaking time. It's the people that make it special, too. It's so worth it. So when it came to Steam, I saw, as you know and you acknowledge, the moment I saw it pop up on the Nintendo Switch, I was like, gimme. Oh, I want to talk about this game on the air. I want to talk about this because it's so worth talking about. And I feel like this is one of those games that's going to totally go under so many people's radars because it doesn't stand out in the store. But it deserves to stand out in the store because it's a quality product and it's tons of fun and more people should play it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
It is good. Sounds great.
I can tell.
I think I'm going to check that one out myself.
You will not regret it. You will not regret it.
The only thing I regret is not having friends.
You have a lady in the house. Just two players. Just be careful because you might be sleeping on the couch.
Uh-oh.
Oh, snap, get sassy.
Ah, boy. Anyway, one last game for the party cast to discuss is called Skull Rogue, developed by Nelf, published by Dragius Games. It released February 28th on the Switch for $2.99. Skull Rogue is a roguelike RPG inspired by the classics. Start with an ordinary skeleton and skill up to an incredible warrior. Dive into a world of eternal battles and endless progression. The further you are, the harder and more unique your enemies become, and so do you. Chris, tell us about Skull Rogue.
All right, so Skull Rogue is a, inspired by the classics. It's a retro throwback. It is all, like, pixelated and stuff. So you play as a skeleton. Who's to know what your ambitions are or your story? I mean, you're a skeleton, and you have a sword and a helmet, and you're attacking other things. That's all you need to know, I suppose. But no, like, that's actually good, because the way this game operates is that this is a constant, like, you know, roguelikes, obviously, you know, the big thing is starting, you know, having to start the game over from scratch every time you die, which is, you know, in most roguelikes, numerous times. So in this one, you basically, you know, you start the game and you end up in a room, and the room then fills up with other skeletons. As you're in room one, and you have basically a couple of things you can do. One is that, of course, you're armed with a sword, and the right shoulder button, swings that sword, but it's not so much that you're swinging the sword at the enemies, it's that the sword creates like an arc, like a Legend of Zelda style blast, and that's what hits the enemy. And, you actually aim that blast with the right stick. So it's kind of a twin stick shooter with an extremely short range. So that's kind of how that goes. You can just hold it down and like keep whacking the enemy, which you'll need to do because enemies, like, nothing goes down in one hit in this game. You basically whittle them down, but if the enemy gets too close, they can do the exact same thing to you. You're just as susceptible to stun lock as your enemies are, and in fact, they will gang up on you, so you're basically going to be constantly on the run from the enemies, and then kind of, like, facing backwards and, you know, shooting the sword beam at them and, you know, trying to get around the level, because, like I said, if three skeletons hit upon you, you're dead, because they're just going to keep hitting you. There's no iframes. You're just dead. But that's okay, because as soon as you're dead, you're back at the title screen, and then you have another option that's just called Hero. And if you've gained a level recently, which you will very quickly at first, there's a little plus sign, and then you get to your stat screen, where every time you gain a level, and if you hit like 10 levels or something like that, then you get a lot more, but you get learn points. You know, like I said, one per level, or like, I think they stack in like 5 every 10 levels. And, you distribute these among your stats, and that's your permanent loadout. So nice. You can permanently make your health go up, your mana, not your attack strength, but your attack range, the length of that power beam goes up. And then, like I said, you also have a magic move, which is a magic bomb that's done with the left trigger. And that just, you know, drops a bomb that is timed for a couple of seconds. And if the enemies run into it or get in its blast radius, then it does a huge amount of damage. And that's really good for early on in the game. You can also get its range going up with levels too. And then health recovery and mana recovery, because your life very, very slowly crawls back up as soon as you're I don't even think it does until you put a few points into health recovery. But, you know, you also, the levels have things like barrels in them where you can find either red potions or blue potions. Red potions, you know, restore some life, and blue potions restore some magic. The other way that you grow in the game is that every single enemy that you fight has a piece of armor and a weapon. And basically, you sorry, my stupid computer is trying to update things. Help!
Hurry up before it's done.
Yeah, every enemy drops a weapon and a piece of armor. So basically, like, you know, as you go through the levels, you have the option of picking up the like sword or helmet or whatever. And, you have like, you basically replace your own if it's stronger. Often they aren't. And that's kind of where the game gets a little weird and confusing, because so your starting weapon does damage 20. And your starting armor does protection 100. So as you're walking over these items, trying to figure out which one is best for you, you have to remember what your current equipment actually does for you. Like, because it's not anywhere on the screen or anything. It just says room one, shows your health and your magic and your level progress. So it's kind of like, you're like, I mean, you know, because if you hit an enemy and it says 30, then you're like, okay, I'm power 30 right now. But it's like, you often can't pick up weapons because of how frantic the game is until the entire room is cleared and you're about to go to the next room.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then you kind of have, you know, walk over each one and be like, okay, is this better than what I have? Is this better than what I have? You know? And, yeah, like, so, and oftentimes they are. And like I said, every few levels, the enemies will have much more powerful weapons and armor so that you can, like, you know, change out your set. You're going to be constantly changing out your set. Another little problem I had was that when the enemies drop the piece of armor and the weapon, you actually, when you're, you know, because you're just walking over them and pressing A to switch, like, it's not like any kind of menu-based thing. So you're kind of like, you might end up not being able to even see what the sword is because the helmet's covering it.
Yeah.
Things like that. So just little annoying things like that, but it doesn't make or break the game. This is just kind of how it is. And like I said, yeah, as you proceed through the levels, like, it's very hard, but, you know, eventually when you get into a rhythm of it, you can, you know, you'll start getting into some later rooms. And like I said, the stuff becomes more elaborate. The rooms are bigger. There's more traps. But, like, you know, it's always that you're in a room and a bunch of enemies appear in the room. And, you know, you get a few seconds. No, you get, like, 1 second where it'll show you where the enemies are going to spawn so that you can quickly get to the place where you want to get to, like, fend them off. Because, yeah, if an enemy spawns on top of you, it's just going to kill you.
Yeah. So,
and then you just do that and keep repeating until you're done playing, because obviously dying is no obstacle in this game.
Yeah, I mean, you're eternal battles, endless progression, so you're not really looking for an end. You're just going for as long as you can.
Exactly, yeah. Every single point of experience in this game is retained throughout the level. So if you start a game and it only lasts 5 seconds, that's still progress. So, yeah. Which I actually enjoy. I found myself very hooked on this game. I mean, you know, it's hard to tell when there's so... You know, and there's not a whole lot to the game, like, but you keep playing it. Like, I can't tell if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's certainly the case here.
Nice. Well, overall, $3 on it. What do you think?
Oh, this is definitely a fuck it. Why not? This is, well, I love playing any game where you get to play as a skeleton. So obviously this is a must buy for me. I find it fun. It's obviously not going to topple something like, you know, Quest of Dungeons or whatever.
I love Quest the Dungeon so much.
I know. I've been playing it recently, actually. It still holds up.
I still cannot beat the game with the goddamn Necrodancer.
I think I did, but only the easiest version. I can't remember, though.
I can't do it. That's the only achievement I need in the game is to beat the game with the Necrodancer, and I can't
do it. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I don't play it with a
cheat. The Necrodancer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Necrodancer is a guest star in Quest of Dungeons.
Ooh.
But yeah, Skull Rogue, I definitely... It impressed me for as cheap as it is, how well it holds up and how much I wanted to play it. Like I was playing it the entire time I was reviewing it just now.
Nice.
And I gained a few levels. So
yay.
Great.
Oh man. All right. Well, that is it for the party cast. We do have a couple more games to talk about, so we're going to move on with that. Purnell, Chris, Cole, thank you all for being here. Do any of you have any final words before we move on?
Ori.
All right, and finally tonight, we're bringing in our good friend Tim Ekibis. Tim, how are you doing?
Great, I'm fine.
You seem so excited to be here.
I am excited to be here. It's been a couple weeks. I'm back with three more games to talk about.
You are. Are you ready to dive into these, or did you want to like chit-chat first?
No, one thing, today is Mario Day.
It is.
As of this recording. And March Lego 10th. Announced that Lego is doing some kind of Super Mario thing. Presumably being Lego, it's Lego Mario sets.
I thought I read somewhere that there's going to be like 13 sets, Mario Maybe. Sets, something
if they
like
do
that.
A full line, like, yeah, I could see that. I mean, they did, I guess they did 8 total for Overwatch, 6 in the first line and then 2 more and no more since, which I own 7 of the 8.
Which one are you missing?
Or actually, no, I have six of the 8. I don't have Roadhog and Junkrat on their bike, and I don't have the Hanamura Showdown one, but I have all the other ones in the house. Some of those are pretty good.
Yeah, pretty Lego. I didn't peg you as a Lego fan.
Oh my god, do I have Legos. Holy shit. I mean, at my desk at work, I have the International Space Station, which I just built.
And, dude, that's so cool.
And the Guardians of the Galaxy, because I have all of them in Lego minifigure form at this point. All I can see in my line of sight is some of the Overwatch ones. The Destroyer droids from the Star Wars prequels. I see one of those, but he's kind of busted up. Let's see. There's the pirate guy from the Lego movie who appears to have flipped over Iron Man in his Hulkbuster armor, and there's an X-Wing over there, too. But most of them I can't. The other Overwatch ones, I can see their shadows are up in that cabinet. There's Bastion and Reinhardt and D.Va. Like, no, I have a Lego... and then over there is my Millennium Falcon. Yeah, over there on the TV stand is where that is. And a B-Wing from Star Wars. Yeah, we do Legos in this house, or at least I do. And I have the fucking Lego Voltron that they did. Oh, that one was awesome. That is definitely the most expensive Lego set I have ever owned, but it is
what
awesome.
What did that run you?
It was a birthday present, but I know that thing retails for like over $150, I think.
Oh, damn.
It's like 2,000 pieces. It's awesome.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's a legit serious Lego piece there. Have you watched that show Lego Masters on TV at all?
I have not, because I don't watch it, but I know it's on Hulu or whatever, but no, I have not watched any of it.
Ashley and I have been addicted to that. We love that show, and Will Arnett's the host, so.
Yes.
It's just enjoyable to watch.
Cool. Yeah. No, I got some Legos. And now my child has Legos, so we both have Legos and whatnot, so it's, yeah.
Well, maybe I'll see you on the show in a couple of years.
Yeah, probably not. I am not a master by any means. No, it was like some weird thing where I was like, I had brought all my stuff, you know, from my parents' house to this house. And I was like, why do I feel like I had so much more shit as a child? Like, where is it all? And then I remembered, like, oh, Legos. Those are all still at my parents' house. So, yeah, now I have there's all my childhood Legos are here. Like, for a while, I was trying to filter them out of bins and, like, reassemble the old sets. Still a goal of mine to get through all that eventually. I got through some, but, oh, there's, like, a half-built General Grievous up there. he kind of fell apart in a move at one point. It's the tough thing.
Do you ever glue them together to make sure they don't fall apart?
No, I know. I don't do that shit. No, I don't glue them together. Because I always, well, as a kid, I would build it once, and then I would take it apart, and then I would start, you know, building other things eventually. But no, I would never, I don't think I would ever glue them, because at most I will take them apart, and then at this point I will take them apart and put them in a plastic bag so all the pieces to the set are together. And then, you know, so it could be rebuilt, or you could just get out that set of pieces to play with. Oh, there's an AT-ST right there. I didn't see it hiding. Hi there. I mean, I'm in like, this is like Lego Central of my damn house. It's all in my basement. Oh, there's spaceship from the Lego movie. I forgot that's up on that shelf because I didn't want my kid messing with it anymore. That's why I'm missing pieces to things, because he would touch them and then say he would be careful and not. Oh, and there's the Incredible Hulk. Hi, Hulk. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, you would like that show. So fire up Hulu and check it out.
Yeah, I'll put it on the list of that and all the other crap I need to watch.
But yeah, Mario Lego. That should be pretty awesome.
I'm pretty hype. I'm excited to see what it is. Should be a lot of fun for both me and the kid. You know, because they're four kids. So
yeah.
Theoretically. I mean, some of them are like ages 16 and up. They're, you know, they're pretty close to adult age ranges on there. Let's not.
I mean, you're a big kid.
Yeah. Absolutely. Aren't we all?
Yes. I will never grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid.
Speaking of which, video games.
Video games. Yeah, you got three of them to talk about. You ready to get into these?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. First game to talk about is called Langrisser 1 and 2, developed by Extreme and Chara-Ani Corporation, published by NIS America, released March 10th on the Switch and PS4 for $49.99. Heroes die, but legends live forever. You are the arbiter of a fate in a world ravaged by wars through generations of heroes who battle for peace, order, or chaos. Command Ledwin, Elwin, and their companions in their quest to obtain the secret sword Langrisser and restore peace to a war-stricken land. Decide who your allegiance lies with in Langrisser 1 and 2 remastered for modern consoles. Tim, tell us about it.
I mean, for one, Langrisser 2 never even came out over here, so...
Very true.
It's been... Oh my god, there's a cobweb there. Holy shit. Yeah, this is the first appearance of Langrisser 2 in the English language, so props to that. Langrisser 1 appeared. These are both Genesis games originally. Langrisser 1 was released as War Song over here in the States. Langrisser 2 never got released over here. I believe a 3DS one got translated and released over here. But otherwise, the series has been kind of missing from our shores and our preferred language. So what you get in this collection is Langrisser 1 and 2, a modern update of two Genesis games. The graphics they're all updated sprites. There is no way to look at, to get an old visual style in there. So you just get the new stuff, which is not bad, but I'm just saying for the sake of people that might want the older graphics, those aren't here. It's just all modern drawn sprite artwork. These games are basically Fire Emblem, to say the least. in that it's overhead. It is tactical combat games. There is literally the same weapon triangle. I think it's the exact same. No, because I think there's horses instead of axes. But there's a weapon triangle all the same. It feels very familiar, I guess, in that sense. It's like, oh, yeah, this is what Fire Emblem used to be like before it turned into like a dating sim thing. Awakening. Pre-Awakening Fire Emblem is kind of what you're getting here. One of the ways it deviates is that your characters are, and this is kind of lightly implied in the Fire Emblem games, but, you know, your main characters are commanders. But literally in Langrisser, when you start a battle, you will hire mercenaries. So you will hire a crew of units per battle to hang that your commanders will control. Who they can hire is dependent on what class they are. There are class, you know, each character has a class tree, which you can conveniently look over the whole thing before you start dropping points into stuff, which is nice. And then those mercenaries you control individually. I will say one thing about this game is it can get a little exhausting in just how many units there are on the field. There is an option to skip battle animations, which I recommend you skip battle animations immediately. Like, I looked at them once and I was like, okay, cool, I get it. But if you ever want to get through a battle, like, you need to turn those shits off. Cause like there will be your guy, you know, like your guy, and they will have like four mercenary units apiece. So, you know, however many generals you have in the battle. And then there will also be, you know, the enemy generals and their like their underlings. And then oftentimes there will also be like neutral units and their like underlings. So you'll just have like, no, exactly what, you know, like 30 fucking units out on the field at any given time, and they all got to take turns moving, and they're all going to fight each other. And it could just be a little exhausting, even with those animations turned off. It's just like, goddamn, like, this just takes a while. But that's you know, what the game is going for, as opposed to Fire Emblem, where you just have your individual main characters, and that's who you're controlling. And this, you are controlling larger, armies, for better or worse. So if you kill an enemy leader, then all of the units that are subservient to that leader will disappear, though you'll get less experience for not murdering those other guys first. The games are both one and two look pretty much exactly the same. I mean, they developed them, I believe, at the same time. So they're using a pretty much identical art style. Like, the UI is pretty much identical. When you load up the games and it drops you on the world map, like, it looks exactly the same, pretty much, except like, oh, there's a different main character here and you're in a different part, a different map. But otherwise, it's like you have the same options for managing your commanders, and it lets you look at the entire story tree. Both games have branching paths, like a lot of branching paths. I think these games were meant to be replayed a lot. Like, there are 13 different paths.
Wow.
For Langrisser 2, and there's about half that for Langrisser 1. And they will deviate at different points in the timeline. So it's not like you get to the end and then it's like, oh, it goes off in three ways. Like, no, it deviates a lot, and there's like a lot of variance in the missions. Especially in 2, like, that is just mind-boggling, like, looking over it, and like, okay, this just keeps going down. So that all depends on the choices you make, and how things play out, in the battles. So that's cool. As a collection, the kind of the options are pretty bare bones. You do have the option. You don't have the option of picking the full Genesis, original Genesis graphics, but you can toggle between the music. So you can have the original Genesis music, or you can have a modern arranged version of that. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. You can also, like, each characters have portraits for when they're talking to one another, and you can choose to have those in the classic art style or the modern art style. And I personally have a heavy preference for, like, that era of anime-looking characters, as opposed to, I guess, the modern look, at least in this game. So you're thinking, like, how characters, you got to think back to that era, like, how they looked in, like, Lunar or Magic Knight Rayearth, you know, early 90s anime or slash manga-looking style. So that's cool. Battle animations, like I mentioned, those are skippable, and they should be. There is voice acting. It's all in Japanese, so you get your choice of English or like Chinese subtitles. So you probably want English if you're listening to this podcast and living in this country. But yeah, like, it is a classic tactical strategy experience. Which can cut both ways, in that, like, yeah, it doesn't have a lot of the modern amenities that I think we've come to expect, or that Fire Emblem might have conditioned people to look for in these games. Like, it certainly doesn't have the expansive, like, social options of the more recent Fire Emblem games. Like, there's no base building thing. It's like, you go into a battle, you fight the battle, you get out of the battle, and then it's like, okay, you can then customize your characters, do a bit of shopping, and then it's back into battle, you know? Yeah, there's not a lot going on in between. But that, you know, for better or worse. So, like, if you were just recently into the Fire Emblem games, this game might be come as a bit of a shock to you with just how much you've come to expect isn't there in this game. But also, I mean, if you are, and like I said, this is Langrisser 2's first time coming to these shores, and Langrisser 1, you know, is all we've had up to this point. So if you are a Falcom fan, the original developer of these games, like, hoo boy, like, oh man, have I got a game for you, and it's this one. But I think, like, more modern tactical strategy fans might have a bit more of a tepid response to it, I think, in the end.
Yeah, well, overall, $50, you're getting two games. What's your verdict on this one?
I'm going to give it a try it. Not that I think there's anything, like, especially wrong with it. I would have liked to see some more robust collection options or you know, some slight modernizations, like ability to, like, fast forward a bit more through the battles. But I do think some people will really enjoy it, and certainly will, you know, you will get the value out of it from the time. Like, the amount of replay value in these games, just the question is, like, are they going to hook you hard enough to pull you in for all those replays? So it might be a thing where you want to wait on it a little bit, see if there's, like, a bit of a sale before diving right in.
Or the good news, I know at least on the Switch, I'm not sure if it's there on the PS4 or not, but there is a demo for the game.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah, check out the demo. And if you love it, there you go. Buy it. You know, there you go. Figure it out. But it's cool.
Yeah, what are you looking for? A review on this show?
Yeah, come on now.
Do your own homework. We're not
seriously. They got your parents. Educate yourself.
Oh man! All right. Next game to talk about is called Unlock the King, developed by Minimal Games in Cubite Interactive, published by Cubite Interactive. Released March 5th on the Switch for 99¢. A chess-inspired puzzle game designed by the creator of Zen Chess. Move the pieces and create a path to unlock the king. Tim, tell us about Unlock the King.
Unlock the King. It's a dollar. So yeah, this is a game in which you have 100 discrete levels. The idea is each level will, you have a king, one king, and he,
there's 100 levels in the game.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. You,
that's
he
a
will
lot
be,
of game.
He will be, it depends on how smart you are. He will be at one end of the board, and there will be an exit that he needs to get to, and blocking his way will be a variety of chess pieces. And your job is to maneuver those pieces out of the way to create a path to so the king can make his way to the exit. Such a thing, like, if you have played chess, which initially threw me off, I'm like, okay, well, I have to make sure the king isn't in check and doesn't move through check. No, that's not a thing this game is thinking about. You just have to move shit out of the way. Like, the whole chess motif is just based around you being able to figure out how to maneuver, you know, like, rooks and bishops and knights and queens around the board and knowing how those pieces work. And I say knowing how those pieces work because this game doesn't tell you. So if you are somehow completely unfamiliar with chess, it's not going to help you out that much, though I think you can, you'll figure it out just by playing the first few levels. Yeah. You know, it's not rocket science, it's chess. Yeah, there's no explanation of how the pieces move, which is, it's fine. You know, knights have their little L move, bishops are diagonal, rooks are side to side, and queens go everywhere. There's no hint system to help you out in case you get stuck. You know, there's not really much. You can reset the board once you, you know, if you're in there and you're working on a puzzle and you kind of get stuck, you can reset it back to the starting position. Like, there's no option to just, like, go back a couple moves, you know, if you think you just barely missed it. There you can use touch controls to move the pieces around just by, like, tapping on one, then tapping on the space they can go to. Sometimes that helped and sometimes it didn't. I kind of jumped back and forth between that and, like, using your traditional stick and button controls. But that's it. That's the game. That's what you do. That's what you do for 100 levels. There's no other frills to it. That's what you do. It's a puzzle game. It's a dollar. It has a very nice, sharp, clean look to it. I will say that, like, the board and the pieces look very crisp and clean. I feel like almost like a little too clean. Like maybe like they could have made the pieces look a little more distinct from one another. Like on occasion, I was like, "Oh, that's what that is. It's not that."
Yeah, there were a couple of levels where it would have like bishops and knights, and I'm like, "Which is which? I can't really tell which one is which." It's
you kind of get used to it, but like, and it was just like, "Oh, wait, that's a queen. Oh, okay." Like there could have been a bit more of a distinction, but I think it's something that your eyes kind of get used to after a little bit. But yeah, if this sounds appealing to you, it's a dollar, so just buy it. It's a dollar. You probably have that many gold coins.
Yeah.
Just buy it for a dollar.
Yeah.
Should everyone run out and buy it? Probably not. But you probably know whether or not you're looking for this type of just a, you know, puzzle game to jump in, do a few puzzles, jump back out, go back in. But yeah, something different.
It's less than a penny a level.
Yeah, it is. That is a steal when you put it like that. My goodness.
That is. So just fucking buy it.
Just might as well.
Final game to talk about tonight is called Arcade Fuzz, developed and published by Cubite Interactive, released February 25th on the Switch. This one, $1.99. Arcade Fuzz is a 2-in-1 combo with the Walter Machado's hard-boiled titles TTV3 and Warp Zone Drifter. Tim, tell us about it.
Okay, so yeah, you get two games here. And again, this game is pretty straightforward. So TTV3 is a game where you got a little dude and you have to get his ass off the screen. Preventing you from doing that is large things sweeping in across the screen that if you touch them, you die instantly. There'll be like giant spinning gears or like just the walls crushing in. And it's all about just like maneuvering your little dude through and getting him off the edge of the screen. It could be right side, it could be any side of the screen. Just like once you leave the screen, cool, you move on to another screen with more death moving towards you. So you have to think and move fast. It requires, you know, precise movement to get through some of the cracks. I'm not going to lie, my best run was like 10 seconds long.
Holy shit.
Well, I mean, that is, if you think about a game like Super Hexagon, like, it's like that. It's super hard. It's a game where your sessions are going to last seconds and not minutes. And that's like 10% of the game, mind you. It counts your percentage and how many screens you've made it to. So at its best, the game is like a minute and a half long. But good fucking luck doing that, because that is not an easy feat. Warp Zone Drifter does not fall far from that tree. The idea is you are a car and you have to drift it to hit targets on the field. And if you drift like too far off the screen, and in this game you don't want to go off the edge of the screen. If you drift too far off the edge, your car will just explode somewhere. I mean, there's something dangerous over there. I don't know what it is, but you'll die. And if you hit all three targets, it will load you into a new screen and we'll start introducing hazards. And again, it's really hard. I think I made it past like the second level like once. But that's what these games are aiming to do. They are meant to be super hard, very short play sessions, very short innings. You get in, you get out, and it's only $2, so it's a dollar per game. Just really the question is, like, is this the kind of experience you're looking for on your Switch? For me personally, this is more like something that I look for on my phone, where, like, I'm going to pop that sucker out, I'm going to play it for, you know, 30 seconds while I'm doing who knows what. You know exactly what.
Yeah, we all know.
We all know.
You filthy bastards.
But on the Switch, like, usually I'm sitting down for at least a few minutes, and I don't know that I'm necessarily, like, looking to just, like, load up a game just to die horrifically for, you know, 30 to 40 seconds. And that being, like, possibly 10 different sessions. Lord. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know about on the Switch. So, yeah.
No, overall, $2. What do you think?
I think it's a try. I know it's ridiculous because it's $2, but that's kind of my feeling on it, is that it's more of something that, like, you might buy it and then just be like, well, why did I get this? Like, you play it for a minute and you're like, okay, I'm good. So you really need to be looking to have that kind of experience. before you dive in. All right.
Sounds good.
Cool.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Tim, thanks for being here. Another thanks to the PartyCast crew for being here earlier and hanging out and chilling with us. Thanks. You got to make one of those one of these weeks.
It, well, I mean, I made it for the holiday one, so.
One of these weeks, we'll get you there.
One of these, I guess, yeah.
One of these weeks.
All right.
Music, we're going to play some Lonely Rolling Stars because they were just a VGM con and I wasn't, and I wish I could have been there. So instead, yeah, I'm just going to play their music.
Same. Ah, well, maybe
next someday. Year, let's do it.
It's a long drive.
It is. I'll pick you up on the way.
We'd be more likely to fly out there. All right. Bye.